It's Tuesday, February 15th, 2005. I'm Alan Joyce, and this is the Everything Digital Podcast.
Podcasting almost live.
The Everything Digital Podcast. If it's digital, you're going to hear about it. Unless it's Windows.
This intro music is Alien Music Club, Crash Landing. That is, of course, off of GarageBand.com, and I'm turning it real low because I've gotten some complaints about the volume being too high. So I'll try to keep it low throughout the show. So, happy day after Valentine's Day, everybody. Couldn't get a podcast in yesterday, but making better time than usual. There's been huge delays for the past couple weeks, but getting back on track, and we'll see how it goes. But, hey! Let's do those 5 5-second news headlines. Alright, Yahoo has released a new toolbar plugin that now supports Mozilla Firefox. Microsoft is currently investigating a Trojan known as Bankash-A that attacks its new anti-spyware program. Parents of students affected by a new school initiative that uses radio frequency ID tags to track attendance are protesting the program. Microsoft is planning to include the ability to see status information in a small external display on the lids of laptops running its next OS. And Intel is working towards the goal of chips that allow faster processing with lessened energy use, allowing a single charge to last all day. Those are just the short headlines. There are, as always, links to the full stories in the show notes at everythingdigital.org. Okay, so, to start out, I got a lot of statistics for you. There was a survey conducted of 2,201 people, and they surveyed to see what types of demographics owned MP3 players. And turns out 11% of Americans over 18 own an iPod. Just an iPod, not an MP3 player in general. 1 out of 5 Americans under the age of 30, and 1 in 7 Americans 30 to 48 years old own an MP3 player. Men are more likely to have MP3 players than women, 14% to 9%. Internet users are 4 times more likely to own an MP3 player than those without a connection. 23% of broadband users have an iPod or other MP3 player. 16% of parents with children under 18 have MP3 players, while only 9% of parents without children living at home do. And there's a 2% margin of error on all those statistics. So, basically, they're really popular. And the iPod is, well, as always, is selling out, or its sales figures are way past anything else on the market, with 11%. Of Americans over 18 owning an iPod. And what is their market share of the music player market? I think it's over 70. Maybe I'm getting that confused with, or at least hard drive music player, but maybe I was getting that confused with iTunes Music Store, which is in the 70s as well. But I know it's over 5%, which is their share of the computer market, but of course that's growing as well. And we'll get to that in New York Times Circuits, which I also have planned. And they did mention Apple quite a bit. So we'll talk about that a little later. But for now, really exciting news. I got to demo of PSP for the first time. So that was really great. Just incredible device. I just love it. I'm definitely getting one. I'm going to stand in line until midnight on, what is that, the 23rd then? So I think it doesn't it come out the 24th of March. I should know that. And just wonderful. I posted some pictures up on my Flickr blog, which is flickr.com/photos/everythingdigital, and there's some screenshots of the golf game that is out for it right now. I forget the exact name of it. But incredible device. What really amazed me is the analog stick. I thought it would be like on a PlayStation controller, right? Is they're those little joystick type things that can move in any direction, and you get really smooth movement out of them. But they're pretty bulky. They stand up above the rest of the controller. Well, on the PSP, because it's such a low profile device, it's like this really thin analog stick in the first place, but it's still got the feel of a normal analog stick. And then instead of tilting, it slides. But it slides in this really clever way that just it makes it feel just like a normal analog stick, basically. And really smooth movement, really great. And I just wish the games would use it a little more. It's mostly used just for view adjustment. But really wonderful. And the screen is incredible, I gotta tell you. Just amazing. It's so crisp and has the graphics of almost a PlayStation 2. I don't actually know the specs on that, but I think it's pretty close. Excuse me. And it just amazing. The controls are fairly natural. The only thing is, since I used a Japanese version, an imported one, the X and O are reversed from what it is here. Here, X is select and O is cancel. There, O is select and X is cancel. But it doesn't really matter because once you get the feel of it, it's really natural. And also the movie playing ability is wonderful. The fast forward rewind keys are the right and left arrows, and that's just natural. The whole movie controls thing. The only thing is for more advanced functions like DVD functions, that kind of thing, menu, all those all those little buttons you see on the bottom of your DVD remote. Those are a little harder to work with because you got to bring up a menu and sort of select. It's like this pattern of controls that comes up on the screen. You select with the keys, you select the control you want, and then press the select key. So that's not as natural, but still good. And of course, it's a portable movie playing device for a reasonable price. Apparently, we'll see what it actually is retail when it comes out here. But I think let's see. The person who owned the PSP that I was trying out said they got it for. I forget how many yen, but it was about $180, I think. But we'll see if that changes once it comes out here. So anyway, gets a great review from me, and I've tried DSs, and this blows the DS away. It's just amazing. And sure, the touchscreen's nice, but the two screens are really hard to focus on. I think one screen is actually more natural, and it'd be nice if the PSP had touchscreen, but it really doesn't need it, unless they start adding these like this PDA functionality, like people were talking about adding a keyboard and a web browser and a word processor and things like that. And excuse me, because I'm going to stop this drunken noise that I'm getting. There we go, because of this extremely annoying echo that occurs when you when you're feeding the audio through your computer. So anyway, PSP's great. Can't wait to get it when it comes out here, and then of course I'll have an even more complete review for you. Another thing I wanted to talk about, sort of my thoughts on another subject, is Napster's war on the iPod. This whole campaign of iTunes plus iPod equals $10,000, Napster plus whatever, I think it was Creative Zen, it was all these other players, equals $15 a month. The only thing is, you don't own the music. First thing is, no one is actually going to pay $10,000 to fill up their iPod. Well, first of all, you've got CDs. A lot of people have illegally downloaded music. Maybe they're not downloading it anymore, but they've still got leftover illegally downloaded music, a couple hundred songs. Also, people don't fill up their iPod. They use most of the space, or at least I do, for file storage. And because it's really hard to fill up that much amount of space with music. I think I maybe use 2 gigabytes of the space for music. And then, of course, iPod Linux takes up some space, and the recorded files that I accumulate because of my mobile recording stuff on iPod Linux, that takes up space. But other than that, you know, I end up storing other files on it that aren't music, and most people do that. So it comes down to it's not $10,000 to fill up your iPod. But that's not important, because the really important thing is $15 a month, you've got to keep paying that, or you lose all your music. You're basically locked in then, because once you stop paying that, you lose all your organization, all your libraries. I was listening to Dave Slusher on the Evil Genius Chronicles, great podcast, by the way, you should subscribe. And he was saying a couple things, which I thought were really interesting. First is, your time is so valuable. You miss a payment or something, and then you've got to reorganize all your songs again. And that's worth, you know, a great deal of money, because it's your time, and your time's worth, you know, a whole lot to you. So it ends up equaling, I mean, not equaling $10,000 probably, but equaling what it would normally cost for putting a reasonable amount of songs on an iPod. And the other thing that Dave Slusher was saying is that, and I thought this was really interesting, but probably not legally valid, is that now that Napster has attached this value of $15 a month to unlimited amount of songs, say you've been illegally downloading as many songs as you want for 2 months, you only owe $30 in damages to the record companies. You get brought to court, and the value of unlimited songs for 2 months would be $30. Of course, it doesn't quite work that way, because there's other damages besides just that upfront cost. But I don't really know the legal workings of that. I'm sure there's people out there who would love to explain it, but I have not really looked into it. So anyway, I think Napster is not going to succeed in their war on the iPod. And, you know, yes, I am biased towards Apple, but people don't want to rent their music. It's been said again and again and again. People want to own their music. Who wants to? I mean, it's like, I've always hated being sort of locked in. You must keep paying this, or you lose, you know, all this stuff you've accumulated. You're locked in, and if you get out, you lose all your music and all the time you spent organizing it. So, yeah. Let's get some non-RIAA music going. This is Stereo Apollo, Careful for the Undertow, off of GarageBand.com as well, on the Everything Digital Podcast.
Yeah.
Careful for the undertow. So, a new piece of equipment here, with the hooked up to the desktop. I have a USB hub now, which is working just wonderfully. And now I'm able to connect both my Bluetooth adapter for the keyboard and my USB cord for the microphone at the same time. So I can be typing away while I'm doing the podcast. So that's working out just great. Also, got the New York Times circuit section with me. And if I can untangle the microphone cord here, which is extended now because of the USB hub, which is, I don't know the model number on it now, but it is a Belkin, and it's working quite well for me. Okay, fairly interesting article here, New York Times, and that is about distractions while trying to work on the computer. Email, iTunes, and other digital distractions make it easy to avoid the task at hand, so research is aiming at ways to keep you focused. And I'm just going to read the first few paragraphs here because I thought this was kind of funny way to start an article anyway. First, a confession. Since starting to write this article 2 hours ago, I have left my chair only once, but I have not been entirely present either. Each time I have encountered a thorny sentence construction or a tough transition, I have heard the siren call of distraction. Shouldn't I fiddle with my Netflix queue, perhaps, or click on the weekend weather forecast? And there must be a friend having a birthday who would love to receive an e-card right now. And he goes on to talk about all the distractions that he's met during his day. Definitely a problem, and not one I'm eager to solve, but I think it's you know, nice to be able to take a break, as long as those breaks don't get too excessive. But a short break to check your email can sometimes be productive, depending on what's in your email inbox. But actually, the article goes on to talk about some new interface designs that are helping to fight that those distractions, like only notifying you when the email is actually important, and things like that. Okay, what else is there? Home video made to watch on HDTV about, it actually talks about a specific camcorder, the Sony HDR FX1, $3,300 online, 14 inches long, and they say appallingly basic, doesn't overlay text or graphics on your video, not a big deal for me because you can do it in iMovie anyway, but has no infrared night shot mode and can't even take a still photograph. But it sure takes good video. I haven't seen any sort of video taken on these consumer level HD camcorders, but supposedly very good. The game is a hit, but the work isn't done. This is about World of Warcraft and the developer's ongoing requirement, sort of the users continuing to ask for more worlds and more add-ons to the gameplay, and how that is a never-ending quest to complete the game. Worth her weight in gold. This is they just do these short at-auction blurbs about weird things for sale on eBay or very interesting things for sale on eBay. This is a 1967 Inland Steel Barbie. It's like this specialty, only four made promotional Barbie thing for this steel company. Starting bid $7,000. That is one expensive Barbie. And there's two of them up for bid. Okay, here's the news watch. And plenty of Apple stuff in this. Really interesting. This JamPod thing, which is a portable amplifier for the iPod. You plug a microphone or instrument into one side and headphones or a speaker or something into the other side, routes it in through the iPod and out through the other side. Now, the weird thing about this, I don't know if this is actually just using the iPod for power and not actually running anything through the iPod. But if it is running something through the iPod, that would be extremely cool, because then I could plug a microphone into this. If this could route it through iPod Linux, assuming it doesn't need the iPod's OS to work, but if this could route through iPod Linux, iPod Linux could record what's coming through, and what's coming through could be routed back again to my headphones. If that could happen, then I could record an iPod Linux and get a headphone playback, which would be wonderful for sound seeing tours. Of course, I'd have this little JamPod thing on top of the iPod, which would be a little inconvenient, but not too bad. Another Apple thing, Airport Express router moves off the outlet and onto the desktop. This little dock that you put your Airport Express in gets better range, and you get to show it off. Recorder lets you talk for hours and carries its own USB plug. Sounds very similar to this, the Olympus recorder that I tried to get to work with a Mac, but was unsuccessful. Which, by the way, I took back, and And with the refund money, got this this Belkin USB hub. Insert sound effects into phone conversations. This is pretty cool. This, what's it called? The Raz, a little portable device that sort of is a in between your headset and your phone. Or actually, I think it is a head. Yeah, it is its own headset. And you plug it into your phone, and you can add sound effects to your conversation. They're pretty basic sound effects, though. They're, you know, the usual. Laughing, screaming, that kind of thing. Let's see, a portable projector. Little small, lightweight thing. This is interesting. A remote control for your computer to watch DVDs with. So you plug, like, a USB device into your computer, and then you've got, like, a TV remote to control the DVD playing on your computer. Let's see. This seems like old news, but a laser printer that hooks directly to a camera. Maybe it's the first laser printer to do that. I've definitely seen inkjet printers do that. More on the distractions. Something on... saving energy by standardizing the sleep and hibernate and standby and on and off system for PCs so that it's just on off or sleep. Basically, Apple's got it right, and who else did they say had it right? Many companies. They said many companies, including Apple, call it sleep, a term that has a wide following in the office machine universe. But Microsoft, evil Microsoft, prefers standby, further muddling things. It adds a second alternative, hibernate, that turns off the computer but restores it to its state at the time of shutdown when it is rebooted. So basically Microsoft needs to conform here, which is odd because usually it's the other companies that have to conform to Microsoft standards. The Unassociated Press, this is about Wikipedia's new Wikinews project, which is basically, you're probably familiar with Wikipedia, but it's like, it's a community of users that can collaboratively edit entries into an encyclopedia, or in this case, news articles. And this, a story about this guy who built... The AGC, Apollo Guidance Computer, that went aboard the Apollo missions, and he created a replica, sort of a... actually, it wasn't really a modern-day take, because he tried to replicate exactly how it actually existed back in the 60s. And he did it in his basement, and I don't know what he's planning to do with it. I think it just sits there and blinks. Next page. We got more on the high-definition video and more on the World of Warcraft. Last page, however, more on Apple. But first, cell phones get a new job description, portable scanner. If you have a cell phone with a camera with over a megapixel resolution, you can use Xerox's software. Actually, not yet. I think it's still in beta stages. But soon you'll be able to use Xerox's software to just take a picture of any document, and this software will create it or will make it into sort of a standard computer document. And the last article, Mac meets PC and both learn to share. This is about, well, they mention, let's see, Belkin's 2-port KVM switch. Which is keyboard, video, mouse, I believe. And basically this is a way to plug your keyboard, mouse, and monitor into one port and then split that to two computers. And then you can choose which computer you want to currently be using. So you can have both your Mac and PC on your desk and switch between both and easily and be able to control both. Without having to mess with all the cables. So, that does it for the New York Times circuits, and that does it for this podcast. Let's get the outro music here. This is Saunter Down 6th Avenue from the Pulsars. And you can post comments at everythingdigital.org. You can also email me, alan@everythingdigital.org. You can Skype me, everythingdigital. You can AOL Instant Messenger IM me at screen name podcaster. Or you can call 484-737-0669 and leave an audio comment. And actually, I found out that that phone line does stand for something, although it's not much. If I can remember it, what was it? I'll have to have it on the next show. But it does stand for something. I use this online lookup where you type in the phone number and it tells you what words you can make from it. So maybe I'll have a nice letter phone number for you to call next time, so maybe people can remember it a little better. But for now, stay subscribed, and I will see you on the next podcast. I'm gonna go get some more.